Welcome to It's Not That Deep with me, Lucy Woods, a mindfulness teacher.
And me, Adrienne Kirk, a psychotherapist. Every episode, we discuss navigating the messiness of everyday life.
We know it's a big subject, but we will do our best to discuss it lightly and make some sense of it all.
In this episode, we're discussing why do we stay in contact with people who aren't good for us?
Yeah, I think a sort of alternate title might also be people that make us feel bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think lots of us can relate to that happening at certain times in our lives with friendship groups that we kind of stay with even when it feels, we don't feel good about how they make us feel.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes into two categories. I think, you know, it's sort of split. I've had friends who perhaps were seemingly much more exciting and seemed like more interesting than I was, more exciting. And so you kind of crave to be around that. Perhaps they are doing stuff in their life that feels a bit, I don't know, rebellious or...
Yeah, risk-taking.
Risk-taking, yeah. And I'm very risk-averse.
So adrenalised stuff, right? And yeah, I'm also risk-averse and I don't like that feeling. I mean, I don't even like a roller coaster.
No, but it seems like they're having more fun than me by taking those risks. I've been in that situation many times and it makes me feel like the boring one a little.
I was just going to say that, you know, that there is that push, isn't there? Because I don't want to be seen as the dull, boring, stick-in-the-mud one, so... You know, we talk about kids, we talk about the ones that are easily led, falling in with the wrong crowd, right? And that's that sort of feeling, right? They're having more fun. It's interesting, isn't it, that having fun is quite often the stuff that sort of that will get us into trouble.
Yeah. It's a freeness.
Yeah.
A freedom is the word, not freeness.
And I've been,
But it is a kind of sense of being free to do whatever you want. And I think where we both have a history of perhaps cautious behaviour that's driven by anxiety or fear, you know, that's prevented us from perhaps sometimes doing things that probably weren't as risky as I thought they were, but seemed like every alarm bell was going off at the time. Yeah. Like my parents would be saying, stop it, don't do that, you know. Like we spoke about in a previous podcast, that sense of getting in trouble for doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, did I miss out on stuff?
Yeah. I think the thing is, as human beings, we're not very good at just pushing at that window of tolerance, right? So quite often we then hook up with people who are, you know, that sort of archetypal bad boy thing, right?
Yes.
So now there's, I don't know, joyriding or drugs or drinking too much or...
Yeah. Yes. Climbing out the window in the middle of the night when you're a kid or something.
Exactly. Staying, hammering through that curfew and all of that, not doing your homework, all of that's because you were too busy. All of that stuff that actually I find really anxiety provoking, but there was always this push pull. I want to be liked and I want to be popular and I want to be wanted in the group.
I want to be fun. So that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we kind of talked about it as if the freedom thing might be something desirable. But if we're specifically talking today, aren't we, about feeling bad about it? So perhaps we, at our core, don't want to do the thing.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned drugs or, you know, over drinking or whatever. And it might be that actually that instinct that's saying, yeah, don't do this, is actually correct, and that would be the wise choice. So it's like you say, when it's overstepped just being a bit freer into being really not good for us.
Yeah.
And therefore we feel bad, either because we're not doing it, and maybe they're mocking us for it, or because we do it, and then we regret it.
Yeah, and I think that doing it is... when that clashes with our core values, and I've got a lot of core values about doing the right thing and, you know, all of those good girl characteristics that I learned well as a child.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of things like, you know, being encouraged to run away from a restaurant and not pay the bill or something like that just would never sit comfortably. And it might be really funny to some people, or it might be really daring. But I'm with you. That would really go against my sort of inner values.
I mean, the worst thing I ever did, I think, was I had a friend at work many, many years ago who, she never smoked, but for some reason, whenever we went to a pub, she would nick an ashtray. This is back in the 90s, right, when there were ashtrays in pubs. And it used to make me really anxious, even as it's my handbag that they're going into, because I had the biggest handbag, you know. But it would make me so anxious that she did that.
Oh, I still have friends who take a nice beer glass. I don't. I do cringe still. That's not so bad. So there's those ones, and that can make us feel bad if we're not aligned to values. But then I think we can also be in friendships where perhaps there's a more controlling element or manipulative or something, where someone makes us feel bad in order to keep us subdued or subservient or something.
Yeah. And these are the ones that I'm more likely to see in the consulting room, and not necessarily with friendships, but with family groups. So with parents whose behaviours were massively out of step, and there's then that, oh goodness, my cat's
having a fight,
fighting in the background. There's then that tension of, you know, them wanting to pull away from the family group, but there are societal and family expectations that blood is thicker than water, that you get on, that you stay. Yeah. And I think that is really strong in lots of people. So the ability to move away from that is really hard, I think, you know. That's definitely been something that I've seen quite a lot. And the other place I see that sometimes is with the couples that I see, that the relationship looks awful. You know, it doesn't look like anybody is happy here. But there's almost that sense of, I'm staying because, I don't know, because the other one is more unhappy than me.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a strange thing.
And we kind of touched on that in the, you know, why do we stay?
Yeah.
Even though we're unhappy podcast, didn't we? I'm quite interested, before we talk about the couples, to just come back to the family thing, because it strikes me that there's a lot of pressure about that expectation of what it is to be a family member.
Yeah.
And is it justified, you know? And is it fair to say blood's thicker than water, or I gave birth to you and therefore you owe me, or whatever? And I see on social media now a real movement away from that, obviously not in all factions, but I think there is a definite sense that, hold on a moment, if we are raised in an environment that feels unhealthy, then actually we've got the right to say no thank you.
Yeah, yes, and that term of chosen family has become much more prevalent, right? So the friends that we surround ourselves with, the people we choose to have close to us, being a chosen family, being closer than just friends.
Yeah, so maybe it is a bit of an old-fashioned idea a little to have this sense that because you're family, you stay regardless.
That would be a happy thought, certainly, but I mean, perhaps it is dying out, and that would be great. There are still a whole bunch of people, though, that kind of fall into that category, right? So, you know, I know of people who will be invited to dinner with family members that they're friendly with, still talking to, and find that their parents or their siblings, the people that they've fallen out with, have been invited along as well, in order to have some sort of major reconciliation without any understanding of
what's really gone on.
Absolutely, of exactly what that relationship is.
And people probably mean really well in trying to repair those rifts, because it's inconvenient for other family members for there to be a rift between some.
Yeah, yeah. Think about all those occasions people get together, weddings, Christmas, you know, whatever, and then, you know, if these people come, then these people can't, and we don't want to show favouritism. But that's a them thing, right? So it's
exactly.
Absolutely not about the people who are struggling with the toxic relationship or conflict or whatever it is. And if someone crashes over your boundaries, over your values, then you do have, I believe, have the right to choose not to associate yourself with them.
Yeah, I mean, you'd vote with your feet, wouldn't you? yeah. or not. Well, we or say, sit well, there we, and sulk all night.
Absolutely, we say that. But lots of people don't, because the thing with those sorts of relationships is they induce in us a sense of learned helplessness. And that's what we're trying to escape. And then when we find ourselves back in that, all of those old patterns are triggered, and we don't have then the capacity to think I should just leave. We just react.
We
like
go back to that
exactly
state.
That child Stuckness. that stuck child state, and we react in the same way, and we get, you know, and so those patterns just play out again and again, and yeah. and that's heartbreaking.
That is exactly the reason that people have removed themselves in the first place, and then they're forced without their knowledge to be back in it again. Yeah, so if anyone's listening and thinking that they're trying to reconcile some people, maybe have some conversations first. Maybe be honest. It's not always helpful to be surprised, because that can really catch you off guard. And like you say, you're just the helpless child again or whatever,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real deer in headlights moment. Right? And then it feels like there's no escape.
And I'm wondering, you know, about the couple situation, what the reasoning behind that is. I mean, often when there's children involved or something, that must be a big driver to trying to make it work, even when it, to all intents and purposes, it's failed.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that we'll stay together for the sake of the kids thing. No one think of the children.
Yeah, it's exactly the opposite, actually, isn't it?
It can be. It can be, because you and I will both have clients who witnessed as children really destructive relationships between their parents, and actually might have preferred if they'd separated.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it's no secret. My parents would quite honestly admit that everything was better once they did decide to split up. But the thinking was, that's what you do. You're yeah. supposed to stay. I think everybody was relieved all round when they finally did, because it's really unpleasant to be in that environment where everybody's shouting at each other and
or,
two people dislike each other that
or
much.
They're not talking, so then there's frosty silence, right? Tell your father.
Oh my gosh, I never had that, I have to say. But yes.
No, but people do, right? And yeah, and I think also, though, for the couple themselves, there is also that sense of, this is just how life is. It's just miserable, mm-hmm. and we're just dealing with everything as it comes up, and it ceases to be a shared endeavor. They're not pulling together, start blaming each other, you know, one loses a job or mm-hmm. somebody feels really put upon, and then if it gets aggressive and bitter, I think sometimes neither feels like there is an escape.
Yeah.
It's just how it is.
Yeah, and actually, if you can zoom out a bit, if there are children involved and really see it from their perspective, you probably would make the choice to part. I think sometimes those relationships which get quite toxic, for want of a better word, you're so in it, you're so in the kind of, I don't know, emotion of it all, that you don't necessarily see the impact. I mean, you hear all the time about couples that do split up and then weaponize the children,
yeah.
or, you know, don't allow contact as a way of
punishing,
that's the word I'm looking for, punishing the other parent. And that kind of behavior is really losing sight of what's important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst it's never my job to decide for the couple whether or not they should split up, I do ask, if there are children, I do ask what the children see. Mm. What are they experiencing within this, you know? Because sometimes that can be enough just to start to open a door about, not to leave necessarily, but to think that maybe I could change. Because one of the things that happens is they come to my room and they both sit there, and what I hear is, if only she could, well, if only he changed, you know, and it's all about the other one. And taking some personal responsibility, I think, is really hard in that situation, because we feel like the victim, and we're right, right? It's just being done to us, and we're not part of it. We're not culpable in any way, you know?
And I think that's what you can sometimes reflect back on relationships that haven't worked out, and realise that there was a role that we played within it.
Indeed. I know. Yeah, that touches on some uncomfortable stuff, right?
No, I'm just looking at the expression on your face. I wish people could see it because there was a definite that. But obviously I was drawing on my own experience in the reflecting on that myself. I've also been on the other side where, because I wasn't with my child's dad from early on, that subsequent relationships, if they failed, that would be a disaster because I've already messed it up once and now he's going to be impacted again and certainly in there has been a relationship in which I stayed because I couldn't fail at another one, so I should just stay, and I hung on in there way longer than I should have done, even though the alarm bells were going off. How it looked to everyone else, this person also had children who were fond of me, and I stuck it out for them, for my one, and didn't listen to my own needs at all. But you know, this kind of, why do we stay? Because we're doing it for everyone else.
Yeah.
But actually, when our needs don't get met, eventually that is going to be a disaster anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And then you hope that you feel like you can, at some point, be able to honour your needs as well as everyone else's. And often, we might have said this in a previous podcast, but often, whilst it feels untenable to move on, to fail at that relationship as well, actually, when it happens, it's easier than we think. I mean, I remember, not as dramatic as yours, but I remember staying in a relationship because we bought a place together and we were fond of each other's families, and I couldn't work out how we could separate our lives and afford to continue a life, to get home and to, but actually when we were forced to do that, when the crunch finally happened, it was a whole lot more straightforward. I mean, it was clearly really painful, but I wasn't penniless and I wasn't homeless, and I made it work, and actually very quickly that was better, a whole lot better.
And we do need to be grateful that there are systems in place to support people nowadays who perhaps can't, who think sort of 50 years ago, 60 years ago,
yeah.
If you were a woman with children that didn't have a job and was, completely solely reliant on your partner's income, it was a very different situation to be able to try and leave and have any kind of life beyond that. And I think that we can be really grateful that that has changed now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, my grandparents, thankfully, were very happy, but my grandmother never worked,
Yeah.
They got married when they were 20. She never worked. They had four kids, in those days. What could she have done had she needed to?
Yeah, and I know people of my dad's generation who were very much in that situation where they just couldn't leave. So they suffered that really destructive relationship, very mean. And of course, we know that even to this day that people stay in relationships which are very distressing and damaging, and perhaps, where there's some kind of abuse within the relationship. And sometimes people say, well, why would you stay? Why wouldn't you just walk out? There are systems in place. But we also know that that's not the whole issue, is it? And I think we've talked in a previous podcast around that sense of it being safer, feeling safer to stay in the familiar,
yes,
than breaking outside of that. And I think that has something to do with it. And obviously, perhaps the manipulative or toxic traits of the perpetrator, let's call them, the person that keep us stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, if that person is really manipulative, actually, it might not look like there is anything to be done. You don't have access to any money, nothing's in your name, but where would you go? And I think we can only do what we can see.
Yeah.
And if you can't see a way out, you don't know of anywhere to go, or maybe you've asked for some help and there hasn't been any, you know.
You know, if you've been cut off from the people you would normally have relied on, friends, family, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Then you are stuck. And I think, I think it's a very privileged position to be in, to be able to say, well, why wouldn't you just leave? Oh, you know, there are people who, for whatever reason, can't.
And that, we know that there are kind of organisations and bodies that are set up really to support with that kind of thing. And they know best, right? They are the people to talk to if people find themselves in that situation.
Absolutely. But you have to know about them to be able to find. And once you're in that learned helplessness stage where actually everything is about surviving, about just being able to put one foot in front of the other, being able to zoom out and to wonder where you might find an agency that would help can be almost impossible.
I'm just wondering if there's anyone that knows someone or is in that situation now, that where we might signpost them to, but knowing that there are lots of fantastic kind of refuges and domestic abuse charities and things that will support with that.
Yeah, absolutely. This got very serious.
I know it did, but I think it's important to talk about.
I agree.
Because actually that must be a reason why people stay in relationships that aren't good for them. So it's very multifaceted, these different relationships we have with other human beings. Mm. Yeah. So in terms of, let's say, staying in, or listeners now find themselves in some kind of relationship, whether it's family, whether it's relationship, whether it's friends, where they think this person just makes me feel bad about myself. You know, I do not benefit from this relationship. I think that's ultimately what we have this intention for this podcast around. What can people do?
I mean, I think it can be really hard for people, because if their whole friendship group is bound up in that, you know, it's very easy to say, well, listen to your gut and pull yourself away and don't engage with those people. And
that might be your whole life, absolutely, your whole social life.
That can leave you really feeling really isolated, you know, and you have to be kind of prepared for that, I think, to think, I've got to kind of start again. I've got to find other friends, and that can be really hard as well, you know. But ultimately, I think it is about really, really sitting with it and thinking, is this serving me in any way? Am I getting any joy from this?
And actually, so in your example that you just gave, there would be some benefit from staying, because that's your social life and whatever, which then leads me to think that having really good boundaries might be the way forward. Perhaps you've said yes to things and now you start to say no more often, or you know, you start to really be clear about what is and isn't acceptable. I don't know whether it's language in the group, or, you know, if people take the mick out of each other or something, or whether it's things that you will or won't do, and that you can start to develop those boundaries to be more aligned with what's okay for you.
Yes, absolutely, with the caveat that, you know, other people don't necessarily like it when we change, and it might be a softer way to exit the group, but you might find yourself kind of ejected because you're no longer fulfilling the role that has been cast for you.
Yeah, and if it is part of a group, I'm imagining that it's not all of group members are the ones that make you feel bad, you know, and that actually you might, by doing that, naturally kind of withdrawing, naturally exiting, you might end up with contact with a few of those, but not the ones that were actually making you feel uncomfortable or bad about yourself.
Absolutely. We hope that as adults, we've kind of grown slightly out of that mean girl school thing where, you know, where if the head mean girl doesn't like you, then nobody in the group does.
I think you're right. I think that is possible, but I think it's happening less. Not the mean girl behaviour, that is still happening. It's happening online quite a lot. I keep seeing it. But the ability for the whole pack to go with the mean girl, that's what I mean by happening less.
I agree. So I think you're right that being able to being able to come back to your values and use those to set boundaries is really, really important. And to remember that you do have some agency, because I think what these situations do is they remove our sense of agency. They make us feel powerless.
Yeah.
And it is about, I'm going to say, reclaiming our power.
Yes. It is though, isn't it? It's, you know, standing in, yes, I can't think of anything that doesn't sound cliche.
Yeah, no,
but just really sticking to what feels right for you. And my point was really to bring awareness to how does it make you feel to be with that person? Not the thought of it, not what they do or how they serve you in terms of kind of cognitive things, but actually being with them. How do they make you feel and how they make you feel about yourself? And if that feels bad, if they're making you feel lesser, inferior, unhappy, then is this someone we want to choose to remain in contact with? That needs questioning and sitting with, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. And it's uncomfortable, right, to sit with those things, and so valuable.
Yeah, and if we can make the choices that are best for us, that is liberating, can't even speak, and we will regain that sense of agency again.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Adrienne. Yeah,
thank you.
You've been listening to It's Not That Deep with Adrienne Kirk and Lucy Woods. If you've enjoyed listening, then why not subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode?